This week on Out in the Air features singing author Kelly G. Fletcher, whose newest romance book, Highway to Happy, book 3 of her Southern Sunset series, released May 19th. Next, Ralph Kipnis shares his lifelong passion as a master puppeteer, designing, building, and performing with his marionettes over many decades. Our spotlight's on 4th Street Theater production of Hamlet, adapted and directed by Grant Fitch.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight. He's been with us before. He's been traipsing all over the region and doing various theater things in various theater groups. Grant Fitch, but he's going to talk to us about something later on in our interview, but we'll have him tell a little bit about what he's been doing, and then he'll tell us what he's got coming up. Grant, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Always a pleasure.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been keeping pretty busy recently. After a couple of busy years of being on stage, I've gotten back into directing a little bit lately. So that's been fun. Last year, I directed Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, sort of the flip side
right.
of the Hamlet story. And recently got to direct a fun comedy by Larry Shue called The Nerd over in Hammond. And now I've got the real story of Hamlet coming up pretty soon. So that's been exciting. I haven't been on stage actually in a few months, which is kind of strange for me, but I am, I'm in the theater, one theater or another every day. I'm being reminded that directing is a lot harder than acting in some ways. There's a lot more hats to wear.
Yeah, I know that for doing it for some 40 some years, that and producing. A lot of times you're doing the whole shooting match. So yeah, it's a lot tougher. So.
Right.
And so you've been around all the different theaters and everything and going directing. And of course, you always at holiday time, you do your one man show.
More than 20 years now, I've been performing the one-man Christmas Carol all over Illinois and Indiana. Several years in a row now at 4th Street Theater in Chesterton. It's been pretty popular pretty much wherever I go. Great fun.
So do you have the acting hat on for Hamlet?
Not unless something disastrous happens at the last minute, which could happen. That's happened to me before. When I directed King Lear some 20 years ago, I lost one of my principal roles during Tech Week and had to step in at the last minute. So that was exciting. But fingers crossed, I'll be directing Hamlet, but not having to play any of the roles.
Well, now, as I read in the information, you're actually, Hamlet's a fairly long production. You've done your own adaptation
right.
of it. So talk about that process of how you take a, classic, a Shakespeare classic like that and probably reduce it down into its key points.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if anybody ever really tries to do all 4 hours of Hamlet. If you do every single word, it takes forever.
Right.
I'm not sure Shakespeare himself ever intended every word to be done. I've read that the different versions that we have are pieced together from different productions where he maybe cut this scene and added this scene, or, you know, did a line or a paragraph or a scene several different ways. And so I'm not sure he ever did a 4-hour Hamlet. But in any case, I think every production, they got to make some cuts. And that's where the director makes their choices and has their vision. Now, what I do when I'm directing Shakespeare, and it hopefully doesn't upset too many purists, is I do a little bit of tweaking in the language as well, not just cutting, but what I consider translating to meet the audience halfway, to meet the actors halfway. If there are words that are complicated, we can make some, you know, adjustments so that it still feels Shakespearean, but you get the metaphor or you get the joke.
Can you give us an example?
First one that comes to mind, really, Hamlet enters the stage to see Ophelia reading a little prayer book, or at least pretending to read a prayer book. She is lying in wait to capture him, they're being watched by her father and the king. And so he sees her. And he says, "Nymph, in thy orisons be all my sins remembered." Now, that's what does that mean? But by changing one word, orisons, to prayers, we understand in the context, oh, that's what he's saying. She's looking at her prayer book. She's saying she's in solitude with her prayers. And he says, "In your prayers be all my sins remembered." This is something he says as he says hello, but also as goodbye. He's ready to just walk on by her. And she says, wait a second. Let's talk about our breakup. So just in this small substitution, we get the line rather than saying, okay, I have to go study. I have to go look up that word. We get the context. We get the understanding but still feel Shakespearean.
It's much like the King James Bible. You try to read that in the original text and so many of the words don't exist or means something completely different. And that was in the same language era as Shakespeare.
Right, right. There is actually evidence that Shakespeare himself was one of the writers tasked with doing the King James translation. There are passages, scholars who know a lot more than I do, say is very much reminiscent of his style. So that was definitely that era. And I wouldn't want to read the Bible in the earlier versions than the King James, but even the King James now, some of it definitely means something different.
Right, that's true. So, well, one of these times we'll have a discussion about whether you really think Shakespeare actually wrote that or actually just produced the plays on stage, and there's a whole big debate about that, but I know.
Right, right.
But in our last...
or Duke was the right. True author of the plays, right.
Well, tell us in our last few moments here, dates, times, and location.
We are performing the first 3 weekends of June. It's got a fantastic cast. I'm very excited for you to see what we've done with it, what we're doing in terms of costuming and staging. And this is, of course, at 4th Street Theater in Chesterton. It's going to be a fantastic production. Come on down.
We appreciate that. That's Grant Fitch. He'll be directing his adaptation of Hamlet, 4th Street Theater, June 5th through the 21st. Thanks for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Punches.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, with end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation. Emberforge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Kelly Fletcher to Art on the Air. Kelly is multi-talented and busy. She is a singer-songwriter, author, actress, and conference speaker. As a singer-songwriter, she became the recipient of the Airplay International Award for Best New Artist, showcasing original songs at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, Tennessee. She is currently a backup singer with the national tour, Remember When Rock Was Young, The Elton John Experience. Her latest book will be available May 19th, 2026, titled Highway to Happy. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Kelly. It's so nice meeting you.
It's so nice meeting you, too. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we really enjoyed you at the concert. And then when Craig announced that you were also an author, I thought, well, that might be an interesting thing for our show. And, of course, you're with your new book coming out on May 19th. It's part of what I think from the Southern Sunset series, book three, Highway to Happy. We'll talk more about that later. But we first want to start about talking about you. I call it your origin story, how Kelly got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Oh, boy. Well, I've always been a singer since I was like in first grade, in school choirs, in all of the productions. I've always been an artist, and I've always been a writer. I have little books from when I was a little girl that I would make the pictures myself and write the story out. And all of these things as a youngster kind of came into my young adulthood when I went to college, and my goal was Broadway. I wanted to be in musical theater for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. That was my path. And you know, the universe has a funny way of setting you on a different path. I had moved to New York City to do all of that right after college graduation. I mean, the ink wasn't even dry on my diploma, and I was in New York. And I was there in the middle of winter, pounding the pavement, going to all the auditions. And I saw a friend of mine that was an accompanist when I used to work at Hershey Park. I was a singer and dancer in theme parks all through college. That's how I made money during the summer. Six Flags, Hershey Park. Well, he had just come from an audition playing for a big cruise ship audition, American Hawaii Cruise Lines. He's like, hey, you should go down and audition. I'm like, oh, well, all right, I'll tell him you sent me. So I ended up leaving New York City and singing on ships for a couple of years. And in that time, I met my musician husband, Lad. He was in a band, not on the ships, but he knew my mother back in Atlanta. And he used to rent U-Hauls from her, and his band, The Blend, used to travel up and down the East Coast at all of the great late 80s and early 90s bars. And anyway, he saw a picture of me on my mom's desk, said, she needs to meet me. And so my mom basically set us up. We started dating, but then I was on another ship, and we dated, you know, long distance for about a year. And once my ship contract was over, we kind of melded our two musicalities together, and we got married, and we moved to Nashville, Tennessee. We were going to be the next Johnny and June Cash. And we were a duo in Nashville. We wrote songs together. We were highlighted at the Bluebird Cafe. We got signed to an independent label. And this was back when, Garth Brooks and Shania Twain were just hitting it big. And we put a band together, and we toured up and down the East Coast, through our record label, playing at all the giant honky tonks all across the East Coast. It was quite thrilling when someone would throw a napkin up on stage that had one of our song titles on it, requesting a song. That was a very cool couple of times that happened. And we ended up coming back to Atlanta, and we kind of morphed into a corporate band for 15 years. We started having children. I have three sons. And my oldest son, you saw him at the Elton show. He's the lead guitar player now for the Elton show. So It's a very cool thing to be able to travel with my son now. But we still have, we're the Fletcher Family Trio here in Atlanta. We perform as a family trio now. And I go on tour with the Elton show as a backup singer. I've been doing that for 13 years. In 2015, I've always been a writer. I've always written songs. I'm a very lyrical writer. I love country music too, because of the storytelling in the songwriting. And that just kind of morphed into a book. I was at a job. My sons were all playing sports at the time. Very expensive. So I got a job in corporate America for about 6 years. And I'm very good at what I do. I get things done quickly. I'm a type A. I do it very well. And I would have so much downtime, like after lunch, I thought I was going to go crazy. So I just started kind of playing around with a little office romance, you know, sitting in my cubicle. And a friend of mine's sister had just gotten published one of her books with a small publisher. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to ask her how this works. And this was when indie publishing was just getting momentum.
Right.
And I studied everything. I talked to my friend's sister a lot about it. And I took a bunch of classes online. And the floodgates opened and I just started writing these stories. And I'm now about to release my 21st book on May 19th. When I started out, I queried a bunch of indie, like smaller publishing houses, never thinking it would go anywhere. And I remember I sent it out to like 20 that I had looked at, thinking I'd be a good fit. And it was right after New Year's. And I'm like, what are you waiting for? You know, why are you scared? Just hit send. So I dared myself and I hit send to all these publishers. And within the month of that January 2015, I had a contract with the publishing house. And they picked up my first three books. They're all three standalones under my pen name, K.G. Fletcher. It's a steamier pen name. And I was still working in my little cubicle and pumping out books while I was working and putting my kids through expensive sports and singing with my husband. And then my son joined us. I mean, it's been a crazy, wild ride. And last year was when I decided to pivot from my steamy pen name and go into a more sweet. I have a little sweeter side to me as well, where it's called a closed door romance trope. So there's no hanky panky on the stage, on the page.
Same thing.
I know, on the page, and there's no cursing in it. It was just a lovely pivot for me. And the book that's coming out May 19th, it's called Highway to Happy. And it's book three in my Southern Sunsets trio. There's three books in the series. And I'm so happy that I did that. I've loved having a sweet and a spicy side. And I have something for everyone. So, you know, if you love romance, if you love happy endings, and books where love wins, I'm your gal, KG Fletcher or Kelly Fletcher. Take your pick. That's a little bit about me. So,
well, Kelly, yeah. I have a BC question before children. How many years did you tour with your husband before children, before you?
5 years.
Wow.
We were on the road for 5 years. Yep. Yep.
So did you stop the cruise ships altogether when you stopped?
Yes.
You just stopped?
Yeah. We were full-time Nashville musicians touring with our label and having a blast. I have so many funny pictures. The outfits we wore back then, the big hats and the belt buckles and just, but we were a popular band on the East Coast, and you know, we played everything, including our own music. So it was great.
Give us a visual on those outfits. How did you present?
Well, you know, y'all know Dolly Parton, very country, rhinestones, big hair. I had big hair, big earrings, you know. All the guys had on the colorful Garth Brooks type shirts and cowboy hats and boots and jeans. And it was awesome. It was really fun. Yeah.
I'm curious how you hooked up with Craig. I mean, how did that connection come? And then, of course, now you're in the Atlanta area, but how did you finally connect?
Okay, so we have a mutual friend. We met at a wedding, but we were both part of a company called Playwright Productions. I still did theater here and there all those years. And I was a company member of Playwright Productions that's based out of Atlanta. They're defunct now, but I was with Playwright for 5 years. And Craig was hired as a guest director for one of their shows called Forever Plaid. Okay. You've probably seen show.
Yeah,
I was in Smoke on the Mountain, Sanders Family Christmas, and Cotton Patch Gospel, which are Christian-oriented musicals. And we toured a lot of churches and all around the Atlanta theater scene for like 5 years. But anyway, one of the members of my cast was getting married, and he hired some of us musicians to be his wedding band. And Craig was at the wedding and he saw me singing on stage at the wedding. And he's like, "Who's that?" And we met and totally hit it off. And he's one of my dearest friends. And we have so much fun when we're on tour. Like I said, we're going on 13, 14 years together in the Elton show. And our symphony show is my favorite show. And y'all's symphony was fantastic. We had so much fun. Yeah. So
it's so good to hear that about Craig, because we just enjoy talking with him so much. And it's so good to the way we felt about him is the way he is.
Yeah.
So
he's awesome. He's done so much and he knows so many. I mean, he toured with Barry Manilow, you know, like my mom is a diehard Manilow fan. And when she heard that, she was like, "Okay, I just need to sit by Craig for an evening and, you know, bend his ear."
Well, let's get back to your writing. And of course, I'm going to prompt you in a little bit to read a sample from your new book and talk about the characters. And like I said, I literally finished it last night because I got a late start doing it. But it's a very easy read. You have a very fluid writing style. And I don't know if you do this with all your books where the chapters switch from one character to another as the narrator. I don't know if that's a style that you have in all of them, because I haven't had a chance to read everything else. I read one of your other steamy books for just before the interview. But tell us about the writing style. Is that specific to that particular one?
You know what? It's specific to the romance genre.
Okay.
If you were a diehard romance reader, you would find that a lot of romance authors do switch point of view, POV, from the hero to the heroine and vice versa. So, and it's very popular in romance audiobooks as well. Ah. They will have a male narrator and a female narrator, and they just, you know, go back and forth between the chapters and whoever's POV it is. And I'd like to interject here that my steamy series, The Bennetts of Langston Falls, it's a 5-book small town steamy romance series. It was recently acquired by Vinci Publishing out of Great Britain. Uh-huh. And Tantor Media just acquired the audiobook rights. Uh-huh. And the first audiobook for book one is coming out in November. And it's duo POV. I have a male and a female narrator for this series. And I am so excited. I cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I got to help pick out the narrators.
I was going
to
say, with your acting ability, you might want to do the female narration.
Well, I did narrate my Reigning Hearts series.
Okay.
There's 4 books that are narrated in that 5-book series. And the only reason I did that, it happened right when the pandemic hit in 2020. And overnight, I lost 58 shows. Overnight, when the world shut down. So I had to pivot. So I turned a bedroom closet into a sound booth. And a lot of my musician friends helped taught me through all of the ins and outs of narration and editing and all that. And that's what I did while everything was shut down. I narrated my own, my four books, and those are available on Audible. I enjoyed the reading part and being my own characters and telling my own story. But man, oh man, the production side just about killed me. It was so hard. I'm really proud of myself that I did it, but I'm going to leave it to the experts from now on. So yeah, Tantor Media can take over and
Do that.
Yeah. Will this one have a British flair to it? Will there be?
No, this is, this is just because my publisher's from England, has nothing to do with how the books are packaged or narrated or anything. No, the two actors that I picked from the audition tapes sound very Southern. It's a Southern series. Right. A lot of my stuff is Southern because I'm from Atlanta, but they're excellent. And I cannot wait to share these with the world. So anyway.
Yeah, I know about the editing of books because having done a few of those myself, it's and actually producing them like in my old studio here, you got to make sure the levels are this, and everything. It's a lot of work. Well, we want to give you a chance to share something from your new book that's coming out on May 19th and tell us a little bit about maybe just the background of it and then a little sample.
So Highway to Happy is book three in my Southern Sunsets romance. And all three of these books take place in the little Georgia fictional town of Hartsboro. Ah. And it's a very tiny, small town where everybody knows your business. And there's a lot of recurring characters that cross over from book one to my current release, book three. And I've found over the years that readers love reoccurring characters, family members, the same dog. I mean, it's really funny. They just feel at home. You know, you've built them a world that they want to go back to. And Highway to Happy is my heroine, Carrie Clayton, is a real estate agent in this tiny town, and she never wanted to stay in this town. She wanted to move to Atlanta to be with all her besties and live the city girl life. But her father passed away and left her this flailing real estate business. And she was an only daughter, and she's trying to do right by her father. And she's just going through the motions of her life. Well, here comes Adam Woodbury. He is like a vagabond character. He is living in a camper van with his big Labrador retriever, and he's from California. So he's been crisscrossing the country. He's a photographer, and he's taking nature photos, and he's very much to himself. He has some tragic secrets that he's running from. And he and Carrie, of course, hit it off and they get to know each other. But it takes Adam some time until he reveals his past story, which is it's very tragic and sad. And
don't reveal anything.
I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but it was something that really affected me last year. And I just felt like the story was born from a lot of articles I read and some news that I saw. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, this will be Kelly Fletcher reading from her new book, The Highway to Happy from the Southern Sunsets series.
My eyes land on the third table. I notice a man hunched over a plate of food, eating like he hasn't had a proper meal in days. My brow furrows and I sit up straighter to get a better view. I've never seen this guy before. His sun-streaked hair brushes his shoulders and his flannel shirt is torn at the elbows. I watch him run a napkin across his scruffy face. He takes a piece of meat between his fingers and offers it to his big dog, sitting obediently on the sidewalk next to him. "Here you go," Miss Jenny interrupts. I turn away from the window and offer her a polite smile. "That was fast. Thank you." brisket with a side of turnip greens, tomatoes and cucumbers, and squash casserole. I know you don't eat the cornbread or biscuits that usually come with the special, so I got you a small helping of coleslaw as a substitute. And she sets a cardboard box at the place setting across from me. A to-go box to carry home the leftovers when you don't finish everything. I eye the huge spread in front of me, thankful for Jenny's thoughtfulness. You're the best. All of this food will probably last me through the weekend. You eat like a little bird, Carrie, she laughs. Is there anything else you'd like? Hot sauce and pepper vinegar are on the table. No, this is perfect. I have an odd question for you, though. Jenny tilts her head and looks directly at me. What is it? I nod and motion with my thumb toward the window, lowering my voice so only she can hear me. That guy outside with the dog, is he homeless? She peers out the window, recognition causing her to chuckle. No, he's from California.
Wow, that's great. And you can hear that. That's Kelly Fletcher's new book, Highway to Happy. It's book three of her Southern Sunsets series, coming out May 19th. You know, we only have about 1 minute left. Tell us about how they can find out all about you and your books.
So you just go to kgfletcherauthor.com. I've got free books on my homepage that you can download immediately. And everything you want to know about me, where I'm singing, where I'm going to be for a book signing or a conference, is on my website, kgfletcherauthor.com. You can also find me on Amazon and Goodreads and BookBub at KG Fletcher Author or Kelly Fletcher. I have two pen names, remember, KG Fletcher and Kelly Fletcher. Kelly Fletcher is sweet. And KG Fletcher is spicy.
Steamy and steamy. Well, Kelly, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your musical journey and also your authoring journey. And again, May 19th, you can find out from the Southern Sunset series, book three. And you may want to look at the other two because it's in the same setting, Highway to Happy. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, sharing your whole journey.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art in the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you.
We would like to welcome Ralph Kipnis to Art on the Air. Ralph is a master puppeteer and is the last surviving member of a family of puppeteers stretching back to Tsarist Russia. His career spans over half a century. Influenced by the legendary Burr Tilstrom of Kukla, Fran, and Ollie fame, and leading his own traveling marionette show in the 1960s, Ralph and his marionettes appeared with Sophie Tucker, Jimmy Durante, Jim Nabors, the Mandrill Sisters, and Dolly Parton, just to name a few. Also knowing Jim Henson, Sherry Lewis, Fraser Thomas, and many of his contemporary puppeteers. Now I think we'll let Ralph tell the stories. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Ralph. It's really wonderful seeing you.
It is so nice to see you, Thane.
Ralph, how we start our show out is I ask you your origin story, and we already touched on that in the introduction. But let's talk about like where you grew up and everything. I always said how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about how Ralph came to where you are now.
Well, Ralph began in Chicago after watching the Kukla, Fran, and Ollie show many times and try to make some hand puppets like Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. And then, of course, as I got older and as things changed, I started performing a great deal, and then I started building a lot of marionettes. To be sure, I built about 4,000 marionettes.
That's very impressive. So do you recall, you know, because your family are puppeteers and your mom was an opera singer and your father a violinist. Was that going on in the household? Did you listen to your mom singing?
Yes, I did. It was, you know, at the end of her career. But she was a very remarkable singer.
So early in life, how did you come to doing puppets? Like when you were a kid or something like that? Tell us a little about maybe that.
Well, I try to do different puppets, and then my aunt would buy me a few of the puppets from Marshall Fields, and marionettes grew, and I grew, you know?
Right. And so when did marionettes come into your life? You know, the puppets are one thing, but that's a whole different mode. So tell us, when did you discover marionettes?
When I was about 12 years old.
Ah, okay.
I was in school, and I used to see... we used to see the wonderful puppet shows that used to come, and my wonderful principal said, "Ralph, you know, you do love the Coleman marionette so much. I'd like to introduce you and take you backstage." So we went backstage and met the puppets, and then I was asked to help put the stage up and take the stage down. And as Mr. Coleman saw I was getting interested in puppets more and more, Mr. Coleman said, "Well, Ralph, you want to be a puppeteer, don't you?" So he said, "I'll be your teacher."
And what did that entail?
He taught me how to build marionettes, many, many beautiful marionettes. It started out with when he gave me they were doing the Christmas Carol, and he gave me the marionettes. And he said, "Ralph, why don't you try them and see if you like them?" And I fell in love with marionettes. And from then on, it was marionettes.
So when you're constructing a marionette, what's the process for that? Like you have to figure out the character, creating a character. So do you take a character from like a story or something like that? Or if something else, tell us the process that you go through, Ralph, to create a marionette.
Well, to create a marionette, first of all, you have to make drawings. And when you make drawings, they have to be just simple figures, and then they have to go into the final editing of the drawings. And then from that point on, you begin to build the puppet, whether it happens to be wood at the time, or it happens to be cast puppets of rubber or cloth puppets. But you decide what vehicle or what area you'd like to go into. You have to check size and dimension, because a basic marionette that is used in most schools today are about 24 to 28 inches tall. And they are completely usually hand-carved. We did hand-carving for a lot of years. We did a fantastic job of the show Tosca. And I built all the marionettes. There were plastic wood heads and the bodies were wood. And my mother was kind enough to do the costumes. And, you know, you build the puppet, you sculpt the puppet in clay, then you have to cast the puppet. And when you cast the puppet, the next step is to make a duplicate of that puppet, either by plastic wood or by pouring rubber into it, or by carving the details of a puppet. It depends on what choice you'd like to do. We found that over a period of time that it was a little hard to constantly carve. So we went to plastic wood, which was a substance that you put in a mold and it hardens up. And then you put the two halves of the face together and then you have a beautiful, beautiful finished figure. And then, of course, you have to sand it all down. And whatever wooden parts you have to do, you have to sand all the wooden parts and put material on them to give them body and style. And they have to be put together very carefully so that their head will move, their arms will move, the shoulders will move, the torso will move, every part of the puppet. It takes about 17 parts to put a marionette together.
So, Ralph, that second one, is that made as an archival, like just sort of as a backup, or why did you duplicate?
Sometimes when we get an original idea, maybe we'll build one complete show with the idea that means the female, the male characters and so forth, animals and so forth that you have to put together in a show. But then we do take pictures of the marionettes so that we will have a copy of the marionettes in case we want to reduplicate them or they're on tour and they have to be replaced. So there's a great deal of work in putting together a marionette and a marionette show. You have to think of backdrops, scenery, sound, music, many, many different things.
So, Ralph, I have a question. Is the stringing of a marionette standard, or does each puppeteer customize the type of stringing they do?
Every puppeteer has his own way of making marionettes. Like Frank Paris makes his marionettes with plastic wood and wood. Like Bill Baird makes of all of his puppets were plastic wood heads and wooden bodies. So there are different things that you want to use for making puppets. Some people like to make puppets out of cloth. Like a book I read when I began, the puppets were all made out of cloth. So I learned, you know, step by step and decided what I wanted to do. And I like making the wooden puppets and doing that type of work and plastic wood, which is a form of wood, but it's used basically to seal holes. So when you have to make the plaster cast for it, you have to fit the plastic wood in and pieces to it and to get them all even. And then, of course, you do two halves of the head. So you have to do the front one with all the details first and then the back one, and then you have to glue them together.
Right. So when you're developing a story, then you obviously probably go to stories that already exist from fairy tales or other types of things. But how do you transfer that story into something that you do with your marionettes and puppets?
Well, the first step is choosing the story you want. And then, of course, you want to draw your pictures of what your puppets and your sets are going to look like. And then just like doing a cartoon, you have to make steps in doing all this. You have to figure what the scenery is going to be for the show, what the location, what the time in life is for the show, whether it's medieval or it's pre-evil, many, many different things. It's a very involved process to put a puppet show together.
Which was your most challenging, Ralph, of all the thousands of productions that you've done?
When we had the theater in Chicago 22 years ago, we had 50 shows in the theater that we had completely built. And then, of course, we were touring schools and so forth, so we had to make duplicates of the puppets we were at the theater so that the people that toured the show would have copies of the puppets.
So what was the largest production?
The largest production I did was Alice in Wonderland. That was with human actors and 4 to 5 foot marionettes.
Wow.
Very elaborate production. It had to be a union production done by union people. The sets had to be done by union people. You had to have people that were lighting people, that were scenic people, many, many things, just like traveling a small Broadway show.
Wow. You know, I want to go back in your history a little bit, and something I read is that you actually studied ballet.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, like who you studied with and everything. I think that you were in high school at the time when you started.
Yes, I was at Austin Tech. I don't remember the teacher's name, but she was a retired Russian ballerina. And we had
Was she with Ruth Page? Was it Ruth Page? Or
then No, it was an entirely different name. So I studied with her, and then she said, well, this is as far as I can go with you. Now I'll recommend you to Stone and Cameron. And Stone and Cameron I studied at for several years, and then I studied with Ruth Page after that. And then during the time of that, I danced in some of her productions and some other productions of the other ballet companies. So we worked very, very hard. If you know what ballet is like a life. It's quite an art and requires a lot of time, just like puppetry, to learn your craft. and many, many exercises. In ballet, you start working out at about first thing in the morning. You have to limber up, and then you do your first show of the afternoon and then your second show in the evening. So it's a very, very long, long, hard thing. Some of the ballet dancers say, well, I'm going to put my feet in some nice warm water and relax tonight. So there's a lot of art. You know that all ballet, it moves at a particular angle. You've been to the ballet theater, do you?
Yes.
So you know that everything goes at a particular angle in ballet. So you have to have a good choreographer, and a good choreographer will make you work very, very hard.
Right.
Well, ballet and puppeteering, both very dedicated. It takes a lot of dedication.
You had a thing that happened that kind of ended your ballet. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I was about the end of my time with the company, and the ballet mistress, did not like the way my leg was stretching. So we were doing our bar work, and she decided, I want your leg straighter. So she pushed down on it, and she ripped all the tendons of my leg.
Oh, gosh, Ralph.
Oh, that's horrible. That's terrible. Well,
I couldn't do anything, so.
Yeah.
So I went back to puppetry.
There you go. Our guest today is Ralph Kipnis, and you're listening to Art in the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
So at one point did you start your own company?
My company started many, many years ago. Actually, when we were originally touring through the 50s and 60s, early 60s, all the school assemblies, at that time we had three companies, one in Iowa, one in Chicago, one in Wisconsin. So we had two separate units on the road. And each unit had to have its own van, had to have all its lighting equipment, all the stage equipment, all the scenery, and it had a definite bag. So we toured very, very many schools. You'd be working two schools a day. Maybe the schools would be in different locations. And after that, for many, many years, I did the school assemblies for about eight. Actually, let's see, I did them for about 4 years. Then we found out we weren't making enough money at doing the school assembly shows. So we went into doing shopping centers where we proceeded with shows for all the shopping centers. And then finally, we went into getting our own theater 22 years ago in Chicago. And that theater ran 22 years, very successful, and a wonderful theater. And that for that theater, we built 50 separate productions. Wow. If you can imagine what work that was, we had our workshops in the basement, all of our tools, our chisels, our saws, our paint, and we also had a large border area where we did our backdrops. Our backdrops were 12 feet by 6 feet high for the marionette show that traveled. What else would you like to know? You'll have to question me and let me know what you want to know.
Well, you had a second theater in Milwaukee. Tell us a little about how that came to be.
We had the Storybook Park in Milwaukee for a summer. And then we had another theater and a few other shopping centers and a few other performing areas. So we've been all over the country. I think I've traveled all over the United States with the show, big and small.
Yes. Do you still have some of those props left? You put a lot of work into backdrops and that. Does that exist anywhere, or those are all gone?
Well, that's kind of a sad tale.
The only thing that exists are about 150 to 200 marionettes left out of 4,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Ralph suffered two fires.
Yes, we've had two fires. One at the theater that burnt up everything there, and another one at another place, and the last one in our home. And that took care of the majority of the rest of the marionettes.
I would like to talk a little bit more about the actual marionettes. So, Ralph, what did you like wood the best, and what is the benefits of wood as opposed to cloth? I mean, I know the wood has that particular sound when the marionette's foot hits the ground, and I didn't know if that was like one of the main things that was the benefit of wood, was the sound effects.
Well, the benefit of wood is that you have something that can stand up securely and can do a natural thing, not like some of the old Bill Baird marionettes where they used to just sort of march across the set. When we build a wooden puppet, we want to be sure the legs are heavy enough so that the puppet can stand up straight and not slouch. So wood is a very good thing, but wood, like anything else, doesn't last a long while. I have a few left of those. But after a while, we found, well, you know, wood is great. But then we decided to go to rubber, because rubber could be fashioned and could be molded. When you think of molding a 17-piece marionette, what would you like to do with one? That means the legs, the arms, and the
body. Right, would like it all articulated and moving about.
Yes, you have to cut it, you know, so all the joints will move properly. You have to be sure you pull your molds early. And we found that we went more to the rubber puppets because they were lighter and easier for the people to handle.
Well, I know that, you know, quite a few of us helped you with a production at Valpo University, and those puppets are heavy.
They're
so
very heavy.
You have to build up that arm strength to do a whole show.
Well, when you get an example of the Alice in Wonderland puppet, let us say the Jabberwocky. The Jabberwocky stood 8 feet tall and had a 12-foot wingspan.
Wow.
And he was very heavy. It took two operators to operate him.
Wow.
The controls were about 2 by 3 foot.
So if the two people, like, so one on each side of the body.
Yes, and all the ones that go through the center. When you have the head that moves, the eyebrows that move, the mouth that moves,
the wings,
the eyes that move, and the smoke that has to come out of the creature.
Wow. Did you have a favorite marionette in your life that you really thought kind of loved?
I think my favorite marionette was a clown. And he was, I believe that was the one we brought to your shop, wasn't it?
We brought a lot of them, yes.
And do you remember the clown out of the box and the two dogs?
Oh, I do remember that one, yes.
That was my favorite marionette.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a wonderful afternoon.
Ralph, are you still performing anywhere? Are you still at some point, doing at least maybe demonstration performances?
We're looking forward to the library as one of the first performances of mine. I have had a bad leg, so I can't perform as much as I'd like to perform.
And where is that going to be, or when is that going to be, you know?
Well, it was, I believe Esther saw the show.
That we just did, the Dan Schaff's documentary.
Yes.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
If somebody wants to learn how to do that, become a performer with the marionettes, do you have time to show them or teach them, mentor them?
I would love to. The only problem I don't have is a location.
Ah.
If I had a location to repair some of the marionettes that were damaged, it would be wonderful, but I don't have a location. I'd be glad to teach. I've taught missionaries going to Africa. I've taught people from different countries, France, Germany. Special summer classes at the Puppet Theater in Chicago.
Is there any other marionette companies still in existence, or is this kind of a lost art?
No, there are many marionette companies in existence. Many in Chicago.
And it's had a resurgence, actually. I think it's in full bloom now again.
Yes, it is. Originally, many, many years ago, Tony Sark traveled with a marionette show all over the country, the early 40s, and he traveled with very large marionettes and traveled all over the world with his show. He was from, I believe he was from Mexico.
Didn't he also do the Macy's balloons?
Yes, he
did. Took a lot of strings.
Yes, it did. And he used to make them in New York. I can't remember the shop, but it was a huge shop that he had for making the balloons. And his wonderful wonderful sister taught me how to make my first marionette. Oh. She taught me how to carve in balsa wood.
Well, you know, we're running out of time here, and we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Ralph Kipnis. You can find him on Facebook by just doing a search on that. You can also see him on YouTube. You can see the things he's done, and there's a great article in the Chicago Reader about Ralph Kipnis. Ralph, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your entire journey with puppets and marionettes.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ralph.
Pleasure talking with you again.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.